Moncrief on News Talk.
Time once again to look at the stories from other parts of the world. We're joined once again by Jonathan De Burka Butler. Good afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you keeping?
Right. First story is the US stroke UN. The US has imposed sanctions on whom and why?
Yeah, so the US has imposed sanctions on senior officials in the International Criminal Court. Now, a bit of background on that. The International Criminal Court was created in 2002 by a United Nations treaty, but there's a number of states that don't actually recognize its authority. And of course, the United States is one of those, right? So I suppose up until now, the sound bites that it has been giving in terms of its disapproval have been relatively tame. But when earlier this year the ICC decided that it was going to investigate the United States for what it believes might be its part in war crimes in Afghanistan, things took a bit of a nastier turn. So Mike Pompeo, who's, you know, anytime we talk about him, he seems to be always on a plane jetting around the world. He's basically accused the court of illegitimate attempts to subject Americans to its jurisdiction. And he says it's a jurisdiction that's a sham, basically, and is undemocratic. So they're effectively not happy about that. So they're imposing sanctions specifically on the chief prosecutor, a woman by the name of Fatou Bensouda, who's been in the role for a good few years at this stage. I mean, she would have been around when the first conviction was actually given out a few years ago. So she's had a few wins and a good few losses as well. I mean, the results of the ICC have been a bit hit and miss over the years.
And these sanctions specifically, how will they act?
Well, so basically they're looking at any sort of assets that these people might have in the United States. They're going to freeze those. They'll block assets of ICC employees. They'll stop them entering the country. Now, I suppose ostensibly that will be they'll stop them entering the country because they want to stop their freedom because they're not happy with them. But obviously they're also trying to stop them from coming in and interviewing potential witnesses or people that they want to ultimately issue warrants against. I mean, Pompeo has said, and this is off the back of an executive order from Trump that was issued in June, that he will go to all lengths to basically protect any personnel that these guys, that the ICC might be after.
Right. OK. Yeah, though they seem to be aimed at ICC employees rather than the ICC as a whole. It will just affect those individuals. But I suppose.
Indeed. Yeah, I suppose that the headline is the fact that they're going after the chief prosecutor, really, and sort of blaming her, I suppose, for the instigation of the investigation.
Yeah. Right. Uganda, we're going to go to now, where the opposition leader has been ordered to court.
Yep. So this is the opposition leader and former pop star Bobby Wine, who that's his pop name, obviously, but that's what he goes by. So, yeah, it's an interesting story. So Wine has been involved in politics for a few years, and he's been an MP since May of 2017. Okay. Now, Museveni does not like him. And the reason Museveni doesn't like him is because he has a good chance of getting rid of him in elections, which I think take place later next year, right? He's popular amongst younger people. And Museveni's been around for so long that I think an awful lot of people in the international sphere would like to see the back of him as well. But when he became, when Bobby Wine became an MP back in 2017, according to this case that was brought against him, he gave false information relating to his age. All right. Now, the actual case was originally brought privately by a kind of a well-known lawyer in Uganda by the name of Hassan Mabirizi. Many people think that Mabirizi brought the case with a bit of encouragement, shall we say, from Museveni. And Mabirizi basically said that he had documents which showed that Bobby Wine had, falsified his age, right? Saying that he was 30, that he was, the issue is basically that he was born in 1982, but he had said, or his birth certificate had been changed for him, that he was born in 1980. All right.
Okay.
And the reason this is important is A, because if it is true, he lied, and B, because it would mean that he had obtained documents like his leaving certificate or his intercert or whatever at an age when most people would think that it wasn't possible. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
And in order to become an MP or any sort of public representative or elected public representatives in Uganda, you have to have a certain level of education. So there's sort of two strands to this particular story. Now, Wine has responded by basically saying that his parents falsified the documents when he was younger to basically fast track him and allow him to skip classes. He basically said in an interview that he was so clever and intelligent that his parents wanted him to advance at speed through his education, and that was the reason. But that he later, before he got involved in politics, he basically swore an affidavit in 2000, and he corrected what his father had and mother had changed on his birth cert. So it's all very convoluted. The inevitable question is: is it politically motivated? Mm. You would have to say yes, quite possibly.
Right. Okay. Well, that's not a huge shock, no. Really. That, nonetheless, though, I suppose it looks like they've got him on something.
He might be in a spot of bother, all right, which would be disappointing, to be honest with you. But we'll see how it pans out for him.
If he's found guilty, though, what could happen to him potentially?
Well, he could be excluded from presidential elections for 7 years.
Right.
Given that he's going up for presidential election next year, this could be a big problem. We'll see how it pans out.
Right. Okay. Iran, we're going to go to next. So this also involves the US. Donald Trump is trying to save the life of a wrestler.
Yeah, this is a popular wrestler by the name of Navid Afkari. He's a 27-year-old, and he was arrested during anti-government protests in 2018. Now, the Iranian authorities are basically saying that he was responsible for the death of a policeman or somebody who was trying to basically control crowds at these anti-government protests in 2018. Now, people who are acting on his behalf, obviously his lawyers and various different campaigners, both in the world of athletics and in wrestling, have said that he wasn't involved, he didn't kill anyone, and that the sentences against him, which are two death sentences, and his brothers, who have been sentenced to 54 and 27 years in prison, are way over the top, and that it shouldn't happen. So Trump has weighed in, and he's basically asked Iran. He said to them he would greatly appreciate if they would spare this young man's life and not execute him. I hope that hasn't actually condemned the poor guy to death, to be honest with you, given the current relationship between the two countries.
Which wouldn't be good. Why has he decided to weigh in on this at all?
I'm not 100% sure, to be honest with you. I think he might have been urged to. If you know anything about his background history, he is quite into wrestling. He's appeared at a number of various different WWF shows and the like. So I think he sees himself as being central to that particular organization and that particular sport. And so he might have some influence.
Right. OK. Right. France, we're going to go to next. And the French government have stepped in there to prevent Facebook live streaming a death.
Yes, so this is a man by the name of Alain Koch. He's 57-year-old, and he has been suffering from an incurable condition, which actually means that your arteries get blocked, basically, and the wall of your arteries stick together. It sounds absolutely gruesome. So he has decided, that he is no longer going to accept food and that he would prefer to die with dignity rather than suffering an extremely violent death. Now, he wrote to President Macron and asking could he die by euthanasia. Macron refused that, although he did say that he was extremely moved by the letter, but that he wasn't above the law. And Mr. Koch was going to go ahead and live stream his death on Facebook. But unfortunately, from his point of view, Facebook have decided that they can't allow that to happen because it's against their policy.
Right. OK. Any indication why he wanted to live stream it?
I think he was just basically trying to, you know, euthanasia in France is a very controversial topic. I remember we did a story, must be about 2 or 3 years ago, on a man who had locked-in syndrome. Do you remember that from a motorcycle crash? And there was a fight between his family, his mother and father, who were, they were strong Catholics, and his wife, who was really down as the next of kin, and wanted the machine to be switched off, basically. And that was around about the time we're bringing in laws around euthanasia, and Belgium were bringing in laws. So I think it's all part and parcel of that kind of ongoing campaign that's happening in Europe and around the world. It's going on in New Zealand as well. And I think he wants to kind of turn himself, or he has become a campaigner for assisted suicide. And I think that was part of the campaign. The live stream was part of that.
Mm. Right. Paraguay, we're going to go to next. An investigation after two 11-year-old girls have been shot by soldiers.
Yeah, horrible story, this, to be honest with you. It happened last week. The EPP is a terrorist, small, very small terrorist organization, the Paraguayan People's Army. There's only about 50 or 80 people in it, apparently, and they've been on the go since about 2008. They're a Marxist rebel group, apparently, who are based in the north of the country, just on the border with Argentina. And that's significant because these two girls had apparently come over from Argentina in November and are, in fact, citizens of Argentina, right? So the Argentinian government, a raid was launched. A raid was launched by Paraguayan security forces on a rebel camp last week. And during that particular raid, these two girls were shot dead, okay? Mm. Now, originally, a statement came out, the president basically classified it as a successful operation. And at the time, originally, a forensic expert from the prosecutor's office in Paraguay had said that two girls had been killed. One was 15 and the other was between 17 and 18. They had been wearing a tactical vest. One of them had been, and both had hundreds of rounds of ammunition on them. That's according to the Paraguayan government's original statement. But then it later transpired that two Argentinian citizens of the age of 11 who had skipped over, had gone over into the border, probably to meet relations of theirs involved with this Marxist rebel group, had died. And it now seems that because of the Argentinian intervention, the government of Paraguay went back, they exhumed the bodies, re-examined them, and they clarified the information that they had got from Argentina. So instead of doing that in the first place, the president went ahead, classified this as being a successful operation, even though it had been a 15 and an 18-year-old girl that he had been talking about originally, or at least that's what he thought. And now he has to backtrack because it turns out they're both 11-year-old girls and more than likely absolutely 100% innocent in this case.
My word. Right, El Salvador we have to go to next. And the government of El Salvador are doing favours to people in the leaders of street gangs who are in prison in return for supporting the elections. Does that mean actual votes, or these gangs are out campaigning for them?
It's both, to be honest with you. So I suppose what's strange about this particular story, there's two things that's strange about it. First of all, it's not that new. In fact, last month we spoke about the arrest of the defense minister, a former defense minister, who had done a deal with gangs in 2012 which actually resulted in the reduction of murder rates. Presumably, his arrest was, you know, applauded by the current government of President Nayib Bukele, who campaigned basically on the back of the promise that he was going to be hard on gangs or tough on gangs. But it's transpired, again, from an online newspaper called El Faro, that in fact the government was in prisons and was negotiating with these gangs, hoping to get their particular support to get their votes, indeed, for midterm elections that are coming up, I think, in 2021. So it's a really embarrassing thing for the president, as I said, because he went in on the promise of being tough on gangs. And indeed, when this particular report came out, he said that it was absolutely ridiculous. He tweeted a photo of people in jail with half-naked prisoners, and he pointed out that the UN, he's so hard on prisoners that the UN have issued reports against El Salvador and him, saying that they're treating prisoners really badly. So he's refuting this, but it hasn't stopped investigators from launching investigations in two prisons where they're looking for paperwork that might lead to a trail back to the president.
Yeah. Rule number one, don't leave paperwork behind your crimes. What should we look out for in the coming week, Jonathan?
Okay, so obviously on Friday, it'll be 19 years since September the 11th. Time moves on, as they say. There's parliamentary elections in Iran also on that day. And I think it's inevitable that we will be hearing quite a bit about Brexit over the coming days as well.
Jonathan, thanks a million. Jonathan DeBurka-Butler there. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk.
Moncrief on News Talk.